Okay, everyone. Good afternoon. Good afternoon, everyone. Monday, March 31st. It's Vav Nisan. First of all, I'm using a different computer, so I think the video should be a little bit clearer. So hopefully that will work a little bit. Dusted off an old computer. I think a better webcam. And it seems like we've got a more controlled environment than we had yesterday. We played around with some of the settings. Thank you for sending me some of the settings. So hopefully it should become a little bit easier. Okay, so today I want to talk about, each day we try to find a different aspect to talk about relating to our experiences, what we're going through, trying to find different parts of Torah to stream our experiences through. Again, if anyone's interested, I'm giving a share, a late night share, depending on where you're dialing in, but it takes place at 10:30 every night, Israel time, about each makkah and its relevance for the coronavirus, trying to write some articles, daily chizuk. It's important to deal with the halachic issues, of course, and minyanim, and kashrus, and pesach, and zoomstern, but also to think about what we're going through as people, and as of the Hashem, just have to close the window, it's a little bit loud outside, give me a second, please. Okay, so of course the most fundamental response to crisis, as the Rambam writes in Hilchos Tainis, is to realize this isn't random, and it isn't happenstance, and it isn't just serendipitous, but it's a message from HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and we have to try to process the message. And I told you so often, God forbid not to process the message specifically, it's because of this chait, or because of that chait, certainly at a global level. I don't like to get off-road. I like to keep the conversations really focused, but there are important points that come up that aren't necessarily the primary topic of this year. I think a lot of us, certainly in Israel, are starting to realize that the ultra-Orthodox, I don't like that term, the Haredi community, didn't adopt some of the safeguards that some of the other communities adopted earlier, and this has led to much more disproportionate levels of contagion, and of course we all know what happens next. And certainly some of those parallel communities in North America and in the UK, and from what I'm hearing, and in France and in Belgium. And it's really, and I don't like to write this because when you write this, it's really hard to convey. It's legitimate to ask the thing about different societies and what the strengths are and what the weaknesses are. And certainly something as sensitive as this to learn lessons from society's ability to respond and not respond quickly enough. But the primary emotion can't be anger or judgmentalism earlier than now. Primary, these are our brothers, these are our sisters. And I cry when you look at the scenes and you see the numbers and you look at the videos. And that's really Avas Yisrael. If there's some way we're going to enter Pesach and pull ourselves out of this pandemic, Avas Yisrael, and our love for other Jews and our care for other Jews, just imagine if it were your sister, Chas V'Shalom, or your brother or your wife or someone who made a terrible, terrible, terrible mistake, but now we're suffering the consequences. You want to run into the hospital and start lambasting them or so again, I think it's legitimate, and not just legitimate, it's also important to talk about mistakes and lessons learned, because that will help us be more careful, help these communities be more careful. There's no way to whitewash this. It shouldn't be whitewashed. But the tonality has to be very, very careful. And if it's not driven by care, concern, love, sadness that mistakes were made, and maybe these are mistakes that are endemic to communities. But we're all trying to process the Eis Tzara that we've been subjected to. And of course, as the Rambam writes, the primary process is Tefillah and Tshuva. And I have to take a step back before I get into Rav Kook today. So much of my conversation has been trying to get people to see the bigger picture, the panoramic picture. As a society, where have we failed? What type of culture have we built that introduced or invited the COVID-19 virus, the coronavirus? Now that we're living a different lifestyle, how does that lifestyle teach us about some of the failures? So I've been trying to go global to give us a chance to see larger pictures, society, humanity. But you also have to take this very personally. And Tshuva isn't just thinking about how the world has to change and how the community has to change, but how each person changes. And how can you change your life? I think sometimes these messages are inherent and they're natural. And most people that talk about Tshuva hear these messages. I'm trying to give you that second message or that other message. But I don't want the global thinking to come at the cost of personal improvement and personal change. I'll just quote a Gemara. I have a sheet that I prepared, but I just wanted to quote a Gemara. I think I have the Gemara here. But the Gemara in Yoma, Gidola Tshuva, Shebishvil Yachid Shasa Tshuva, Mochanan Lakola Olam Kula. So if you're looking to save the world, well, it starts at home. And think about how you can change. And I think tomorrow we're going to talk about this. I put out a daily 2-minute video feed. I don't like to cross PR, but talk about trying to find that one part of tefillah that's changed for you. Think about it. I find tefillah very cathartic, and I dive in very slowly and very loudly, and I'm thinking and churning. And actually, I have a piece of paper next to myself in davening. I stop sometimes in davening, and I write down thoughts that are coming to my head in parts so that I can clear my head for the next part of davening, so that I don't sit there and write essays, but just write little notes to myself so that I can let go and then face the next pasuk or the next part. And so maybe you want to do that in other ways, but davening has become very, very sincere. Anyway, one of the metaphors which the psukim already employ in Tanakh for tshuva, and which the Gemara understands, is the metaphor of refuah. So, for example, Yeshaya writes, "Vishav v'rafalo, shalom shalom l'rachok v'lakarv amar Hashem urfasiv erpa m'shuvasam no Hashem." These are psukim which we all are familiar with, or some of us are familiar with, from Rosh Hashanah, from Yom Kippur. "Vishav v'rafalo, erpa m'shuvasam ohavei nidava, erpa m'shuvasam." The Gemara says in Yoma, Gedola Tshuva, it's Pei Aleph. Here I'm going to share my screen just so we can follow, because I want to talk tonight a little bit about Rav Kook. You have to hear his language. You can't just describe it theoretically. But let's take a look at the Gemara. The Gemara says, Gedola Tshuva, Shemivia Rifus Leolam Shinemar Epa Meshivasam Ohavim Nedeva. Here's the Gemara quoted before, Shemishur Yachad Shasatru Machal and Machal Olam Kula. Now, typically, we read this Gemara, the typical way to read the Gemara, is it's an analogy. There are many analogies to our tshuva. So one analogy to our tshuva is refuah. Why is it an analogy? Because when we're ill, looks like we have to limit controls here again. It looks like someone is... okay, let's see. Advanced sharing options, only host. It looks like someone is very eager to try to wreck this year again, although I tried to create controls. But then it's a shame. Okay, so I'm going to ask him to leave and remove him this year. And I'm going to lock the meeting now so that no one else can join because it seems like people are trying to join. Okay, mini is now locked, and hopefully I know everyone who's on. I believe everyone is on. Now we can get back to sharing this year. Obviously, someone tried to wreck this year. Okay, as we were saying, okay, I guess I'll probably start to use passwords. I'll have to admit people. I guess I'll try to only admit people. I'll only admit people whose names I know. So please identify yourself on your ID. So the typical way we understand refuah is that it's an analogy. There are many analogies to tshuva. Refuah is one analogy to tshuva. Water and purity, v'zarachte lechem mayim tahorim, mikve Yisrael Hashem, moshiel be'es tzara. So this is an analogy. When we sin, we feel as if some foreign force has entered us and we're trying to eliminate it. We're trying to restore our health and we're trying to... So just like in the medical world, there are foreign bodies that infect us and we try to recover and eliminate those foreign bodies, dealing with both the symptoms and the root. Similarly, in the spiritual world, the Yitzhara, weakness, failure sets in. So there are two worlds, the medical world and the spiritual world. And there's an analogy in order to help us understand the process of tshuva. Just like we heal medically, we try to heal spiritually. Rav Kook wrote a sefer, a very small sefer, and of course Rav Kook's language, especially if you haven't been exposed to it, isn't always that easy. I want to give you a little bit of a background. We'll read some of Rav Kook together, based on Kabbalah, called Orot HaTshuva. Now the name itself, Orot HaTshuva, before I even talk about its content, is itself very striking. Because typically, and you see this a lot in Tehillim, the two prakim in Tehillim, which are probably the most heartfelt prakim of tshuva, are Perek Lamed Ches and Perek Nun Aleph. You want to read hard-hitting, raw prakim about failure. David HaMelech wakes up in the morning, looks at the door, sees a monster, is shocked, is horrified, and then begins his tshuva. Read Lamed Ches and Nun Aleph. If there's one word to describe those prakim, especially Lamed Ches, it's dark. It's a very dark, and I don't mean just metaphorically dark, it's dark, it's nighttime, it's a lot of darkness around the person. You feel as if the light has been taken from you. You're in a very dark place, it's night, you can't celebrate. Rav Kook named his sefer about tshuva, Orot HaTshuva, because for Rav Kook, as we discuss in a minute, tshuva is a very, very different experience, and let's describe it a little bit. And then I'll conclude by highlighting the two areas in which Rav Kook redefines the tshuva refuah connection. So that's really our purpose today, to learn a little bit about the Sefer, very quickly, obviously, to see how that helps us understand a deeper association between tshuva and refuah, rather than just an analogy. Just like when I heal myself from a foreign body, medically I can heal myself from a foreign body spiritually. Okay? Okay. What's at the heart of Orot HaTshuva? What is it basically? I just wrote some notes because I'm trying to make this as tight as possible. Okay, Rav Kook is based on a Kabbalistic view of the world. In the Kabbalistic view of the world is all integrated because it all comes from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. It's all the essence of Hashem, and Hashem can't be divisible. Hashem isn't like you and me. It can't be broken down to smaller units. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu infuses everything. Everything in this world, consciousness, all of man, the world, the cosmos, every man, his thoughts, his actions, with the presence of Hashem. And because it stems from the presence of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, it all has an internal goodness. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu is good and is merciful. I'm about to write an article, hopefully to be published in some of the Jewish syndicates, and
How do we respond to suffering and evil? And of course, as we've talked about so often, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is good and is merciful, is compassionate. We don't always understand his ways. We don't always see where this is leading. But we can't abdicate or abandon that image of HaKadosh Baruch Hu as of HaRachamim, as Avinu Malkeinu, as Rachamim V'chaim L'Shalom Olam. So, when Jeff Cook, everything is aligned and integrated because it all comes from HaKadosh Baruch Hu, all of reality. Remember, in Kabbalah, there's an integration. In non-Kabbalah, there's a separation. Hashem is beyond. We can't understand them. That gap is called the Yiras Shamayim gap, where we just stop and accept our limits. In Kabbalah, we try to think about how still HaKadosh Baruch Hu's essence trickles down and creates and infuses man. So the world is all integrated and aligned. However, and this is important in Kabbalah. See, we as non-Kabbalists, we talk about two falls in the world. Namely, man fell because he disobeyed HaKadosh Baruch Hu in Gan Eden. And then a second fall, the fall of the Jewish people, the ego, the Meraglim, the Beis HaMikdash. Basically, there's a humanistic fall where human beings fell from their perch of perfection. Then there's a national fall. We fell from the set of expectations that HaKadosh Baruch Hu had for us, and we're constantly trying to recover from those two falls. We're trying to rebuild the Beis HaMikdash, reconstitute our national identity and our integrity, and of course lead, by extension, to a reconditioning and a rehabilitation of humanity in general, so we'll all go back to Gan Eden. In Kabbalah, there's a third fall that happens before that. That's called the fall of creation. And when the world is created, instead of maintaining its original integration where everything is the same, and all of a sudden the world becomes divided, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu's Shechina becomes divided, and things become disassociated from that original integration. And when you become disassociated from that original alignment or integration, then you lose the spirit of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and of course, you fall into chayit, you fall into disrepair. And the world, not just the human being, is constantly surging back towards that integration. We'll see some of the writings of Rav Kook. But the cosmos is yearning because the cosmos has a spirit and wants to be once again realigned and reintegrated with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So the world is constantly surging. By the way, I have to apologize. I don't know if when I lock a meeting, that means someone can leave also. I assume you can leave, right? I assume you can leave. If anyone wouldn't feel like I went locked in, but I locked the meeting so that no one else can join, so that it can't be imposed upon. But I assume people could leave. Anyway, I'll continue sharing. So let's just read some of Rav Kook's ideas in his own language. First of all, about the integration of the world. Let's start with section two. V'alo be'emes, this is in Perek Beis. Hakol hu tovi asher kukach. The world is all good. V'hayosher v'hatov shebanu. And the goodness that we feel, halohu bab mehat amaseinu al hakol, because we're aligned with everything, and everything comes from Hashem, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu is good. Ve'ech afshar v'yos karua min hakol. How could you separate yourself from that overall alignment? Okay, umitach hakara zu, or in Perek Dalet, al yedei hatshuva, hakol shav le'elokus. Here's, I think, one of the key differences of tshuva. You're not just trying to return to a moral state, you're trying to, or to return to a relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, you're trying to return to that universal cosmological alignment. And we'll talk about this, how it's inevitable. The world is divided, it's misaligned. The world itself is surging towards an inevitable tshuva. It's a life force of the world, it's a predetermined trajectory of the world, as we'll see. And your tshuva is not just realigning yourself with your Meisim Tovim, your mitzvos, or your relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, but you're reintegrating with the world, the cosmos, in its pursuit of that original integration. So, this is all inevitable. Ha'olam muchrach lavo lidei tshuva shleima. The world is surging towards tshuva. Now, that's not a moral tshuva. The world doesn't sin, but towards reintegration. Ein ha'olam davar omed al matzav echad. The world isn't static. Ki im holecha u'mitpatech. It's dynamic. It's constantly evolving to that final state. That's going to bring the light of tshuva. That's the right part. Hatshuva, he tamid muchrachat lavo v'litgalo. It's inevitable. It's predetermined. Ki hamachala, the illness, shall shichacha sa'olam eloki, that people forget Hashem. Lo tuchal lakachas mamaritan. It can't exist. It can't endure because forgetting Hashem can't be an enduring reality because then you're totally divorced from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So because the only reality is one which is aware and cognizant of Hashem, that tshuva has to occur. So let's review. The world is meant to be integrated and aligned and inspirited by HaKadosh Baruch Hu. The world became divided, but it's inevitable that the world will return to that perspective, which is why tshuva kadma li'olam. That's why tshuva was discovered or delivered before the world. How could tshuva be delivered before the world? There's no man. There's no sin. There's no failure. There's no Yetzirah. What does it mean HaKadosh Baruch Hu created tshuva? Because tshuva is larger than man and larger than his moral decisions and larger than chait. It's about a world that became misaligned, split, trying to return to that original alignment of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the planets, the world, our thoughts, our action, all connected to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And it's almost as if there's a personification. HaTshuva ba mishe'ifas ha-metzios. I'm sorry. HaTshuva ba mishe'ifas ha-metzios kula lios yoter tov mizukekes. The world is craving improvement. It's built into the world. Tshuva is the foundation of the world, the improvement, and not just religious improvement, but also technological improvement, scientific improvement, cultural improvement, societal improvement. All this is the improvement of the world. This is the tshuva of the world. This is the surge of the world. It's inevitable. It's integration. And when a person performs tshuva, he's fallen out of that alignment. He just wants to become, once again, aligned with the world around him, with this surge, with this inevitable movement towards being complete and whole and integrated with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So what are the main takeaways for tshuva before we talk about how this changes the tshuva healing analogy? I think the main takeaways of tshuva are as follows. One is, as I said before, it's inevitable. It's something that when we think about tshuva, we doubt, can it happen? Will it happen? Will Hashem accept this tshuva? It's almost like an optimistic view of tshuva, which is why the sefer is filled with light and optimism and simcha. It's a process that's happening beyond you. And you just decide whether to join the process, contribute to the process, augment the process. But it's not a local act of tshuva that you take in your quiet room after you fail and looking at the mirror and feeling full of shame and guilt. It's a process of, it's more panoramic, it's more global, it's more universal, it's more inevitable. And of course, you're not just realigning with HaKadosh Baruch Hu or your past self, you're becoming more in touch with the world around you, and you're seeing beyond yourself, and you're seeing that you belong to something larger. Rather, it's a broadening. Sometimes when we think about tshuva, we think that tshuva can shrink when we are because we have to shave parts of ourselves and we feel ugly and disgusting and less. But it's a very empowering form of tshuva. And that's why the whole tone is resplendent and inevitable and panoramic. So that's a quick 10-minute summary of what Rav Kook was trying to accomplish in a sefer called Oros HaTshuva, or of course in the Hebrew, Orot HaTshuva. It's not personal, it's panoramic. It's not something you decide about, it's inevitable. It's not moral, it's cosmological. It's the entire world trying to return to its state. Now, how does this change healing? I would say it changes two things. Number one, and how does it help us through the coronavirus situation? We feel that this pandemic is not just random, but HaKadosh Baruch Hu decided, and part of the way that we'll defeat it, in addition to our medical response, in addition to all the social distancing, is through our tshuva, and our Maisim Tovim, and our Avas Yisrael, and our Tfilos, because we will aggregate enough moral energy and enough moral zechus that Hashem will respond to our Tfilos and respond to our zechus. So essentially, there are two worlds. There's this pandemic that's taking place in the medical sphere, and we're dealing with it within that sphere through all the medical guidelines we're following. But we also know, so every mitzvah, every daf gemara, every ma'isim dovrim, every chesed will create moral energy, and our Kodesh Baruch Hu will then take all that moral energy to the medical world and heal the world for us. And of course, we all believe that. And Rav Kook introduces another layer that if the world is suffering, it's because the world is also off. And the world is off of its alignment, because if the world were aligned, then it wouldn't suffer. It wouldn't be dysfunctional. And part of our tshuva is not just cause and effect. Oh, we have so many ma'isim tovim, so HaKadosh Baruch Hu will then intervene supernaturally, divine intervention, and heal the world. But we're trying to create through our tshuva, which isn't just affected by the world search, the tshuva, but also affects the world search. We're trying to create a better alignment with HaKadosh Baruch Hu's will, HaKadosh Baruch Hu's spirit, and that will naturally produce healing. Not just because of, not in any way diminishing, not just because of our Sliyos and Maisim Tovim, but we'll create through our personal tshuva, because we're contributing to tshuva, because the cosmos is made up of its constituent parts, and then the cosmos will be more aligned with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So it's not just our zechuyos will then be taken by HaKadosh Baruch Hu and parlayed into divine intervention, but we can have a direct impact. So every time that we perform tshuva, we are contributing to a world that's surging towards a tshuva, and that will be healed during that tshuva, organically, inherently, not just cause and effect, because HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants a better world for tzaddikim who have zechuyos. A second issue is the sense that the world is dynamic and that this is all inevitable. I think it's hard, and I think especially younger people, is the world changing? What will happen afterwards? Is this apocalypse? Is this the end of days? And certainly our world will change. Certainly our norms will change. But A, the world will continue to evolve towards a better state. And the world is stable by HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and it is inevitable. And history will continue to lead towards its redemption. And we still have to have an optimistic view of history, of social progress, of human evolution. We can't become dystopian. There's so many dystopian novels and movies and pictures and TV series. I'm sure people are watching them. And to be honest, you walk outside, I hear the birds, and many more birds. We've all seen these pictures of dolphins in Venice and leopards running around through empty cities. And it does feel as if the human world has changed, or we're in some nuclear winter and the world is... Get that out of your head. The world is evolving, and the world will continue to evolve, and it's inevitable, and it's healing, and all the progress we've made, I talked about this earlier this week, all the progress even in dealing with the COVID virus, that however many people die, it's not going to be 50 million. It's not going to be hundreds of millions. It'll be different. It'll be more moderate. It's a more optimistic and evolutionary view of the world, and our tshuva can both accelerate it and advance it. So I think those are my two takeaways from Rav Kook's Arot HaTshuva. Again, a summary is Rav Kook's Arot HaTshuva introduces three important lessons. The world is misaligned from HaKadosh Baruch Hu because it's split from Hashem. And our chait just adds more barriers. If I commit a chait, so I become less connected to the world because chait blocks my ability to see. It's not I become disconnected because of the sin and the guilt. It's just I can't see this alignment. Therefore, I can't feel the alignment. It's part of the alignment. It's very panoramic. The world is integrated. Tshuva is inherent to the world. It's part of the world's agenda. It's the foundation of the world. That's why it's created before the world. It's not just about me. It's about something larger. It's inevitable. It has to happen. My tshuva can contribute, augment it, accelerate it. In terms of how it changes healing, tshuva is defined as healing. And now we'll read the last part of Rav Kook. Parakei, ha-tshuva hi-hargasha hayoter briyah shel ha-nefesh. It's the healthiest feeling as you can go through. If you're looking for help, so I know I'm doing yoga exercises to improve my breathing. I'm being careful about what I eat to improve my diet. I'm trying to get extra sleep, not too successfully, to improve my immunity system. But if you're thinking about tshuva, you're essentially thinking about returning to that original state. It's the healthiest part for your soul. Neshama bria beguf bari, a healthy spirit and a healthy body, mochrachas hi lavo lidei osher gadol shel tshuva. You have to think about tshuva because that's the ultimate source of your health. And that's the highest level of joy, to know that you're connecting to something larger than yourself, something built into the cosmos. You expunge all the elements that damage or injure, and you try to be briah, healthy. These are words that again I'm not going to explain right now. Okay, so in terms of how it changes our view of health, we're contributing. I'm sorry, there's someone here who's trying to chat in. Let's see if it's a real person or. Okay, thank you. A quick question. If tshuva is inherent to the world, the reason for disaster is due to the world being misaligned with Hashem. Why do we not see improvement in anything? I don't think Jonathan Brody from Manchester, I don't think that, let me put it differently. You do see evolutionary change afterwards. It may not be immediately afterwards, but I think if Jonathan mentioned the pandemic of 1918 or Hitler, I think the world of 2020 is a better place than it was in 1918. It's certainly a better place than it was in 1945. So I don't know if immediately cause and effect right after Hitler was subdued, there's going to be a radical leap forward in technology and science, but the world constantly evolves slowly and mathematically and gradually. But the world is constantly evolving spiritually and also in all areas, societal change, technological change, moral change, cultural change. These are all part of the tshuva of creating a better world. And that world is becoming closer to being aligned with Hashem. And you've fallen off the wagon and you're getting back on the wagon and you're joining, as we say, joining the program of the world's growth. So you're directly healing the world and it's inevitable and the world will be a better place. Maybe not 2020 and May 2020, but if you look at the overall trajectory of the world, it will continue to be a better place because it's inevitable. It's broken. Okay, I know it's a little bit abstract, but I want to try to broaden your minds a little bit, get you out of just the narrow space of everyday Torah, Tefillah, Tshuva, and Chas V'Shalom doesn't mean wrong with that, but to be able to give you fresh perspectives and get you thinking and processing what we're going through. And some of it connects, some of it won't connect. Tonight I'll talk about Kinim a little bit, 10:30 Israel time. I thought I had locked the board. If someone can tell me why that person was able to use the board, even though I locked the board, I don't know. But I thought I had everything really tight. You have to join, and I can mute you, and I can only share the screen, but I'll try. If anyone knows why that person was able to squiggle on my screen, please send me a chat. I'll just leave the meeting open for a little bit. But either way, see you all tomorrow. Bye-bye. Good to see everyone. You're all unmuted. You're all set.
Very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Good question.
You're real, right, Ariella? Okay. Ariella, I'm assuming you're a real person and you're not here with some false. Okay, Ariella left.
Can I ask one more quick question?
Sure. I'm just looking again at the share. How could I?
So I sent the wrong link, but there's a link on this website that has a how to
Okay, I see it now.
How to prevent? Yeah, the first one was a picture. Sorry, that was from another save thing.
Oh, okay. So let me get the right one. One second, Elias. There, how to prevent your Zen?
So that's the thing. So like you could I noticed that sometimes they do it with the chat. So there's a way to lock the chat. I'm not so sure how to do that. You could probably like find it by messing around with all the settings. But this has for how to prevent, I think, muting and also to lock the share screen.
The chat is locked. You can only send a personal message to you, Ramosh. I can't send a general question, which is why you only saw the question and then you released it. It was a private message to you.
Right, but I don't know. I thought I covered everything, but then he started squiggling on my board that I shared. And I had, Eliezer, could you just share it in a different chat? Share me the website again, because you put two different websites together.
Yeah, sure. I'll send you a website.
Thanks. I don't want to password it, because then people can't join, but I guess,
Yeah.
Okay, and I don't want to change the link, because that link has been spread to a lot of people.
Right.
Okay, look, tonight it was Barak.
Yeah. Sorry. I saw also Rav Gottlieb, he recently made it so that way no one could really do sheesh. No one else can really share screens. No one can unmute themselves or anything. So it seemed like he also had something like that as well.
Yeah,
you could talk to him possibly about it.
No, that's what I did. Under advanced sharing, yeah. I have only the host can share. I don't know. He wasn't sharing. He was like squiggling there. I don't know. Okay.
There's something also maybe for annotating, I guess.
Annotating. I don't see anything here. Okay. I'll keep playing around, but whatever. Hopefully we've got it done. Can you send it again, Eliezer?
On the WhatsApp?
Yeah. But you know what, Eliezer? Just send me an email with the website, TaraginM, TaraginM at Gmail, okay?
Okay. Thank you so much.
I'm sorry.
A very, very quick question. I don't want to bother. It's a bit of a personal question. So teshuva realigns the world. So in many ways then, rather than trying to take personal messages, I mean, you should be doing that as well, I suppose, but rather than just taking personal messages from the pandemic, it's important to say, well, there are things in my life, many things in my life, unfortunately, where we need to do teshuva over it. And that itself is going to contribute to realigning this world. So there's two strands to this. There's the requirement to try and take a personal message from it. How can I improve personally from this? Whether it's forcing me to become a better father or whatever it may be. To also a more